Got everything fixed. All right, welcome to Hebrew Club. We're at actually an interesting place in Micah. We're at the end of chapter 2, verses 12 and 13, those last two verses. If you will remember, it's been pretty much Oracle of Doom up to this point. And in that verse 11, remember, he kind of sarcastically says, hey, if you had this prophet speaking wind and lie, and if he would prophesy for beer and wine, he'd be just the kind of prophet you would want. All right. Now, all of a sudden, when you get to verse 12, at the end of the chapter, you have this reversal theme that you very often see in the prophets. So juxtaposed to this oracle of doom, you have this little picture, this oracle of hope and restoration. And it's really interesting. And that's why I actually stopped here last week and want to take it up. So I'm going to start at verse 12. With that, Asofa, Asof Yaakov Kulak. Notice you have an infinitive absolute followed by an imperfect verb, also call from Asaf, to gather. All right, and so you could translate that, since I will gather, and then what's the force of the infinitive? Something like certainly, I certainly will gather. See, you could say that it strengthens the idea of that imperfect verb, I certainly will gather. Or you could translate more adverbial, I will gather totally or completely. But probably the first option is better, that it strengthens the affirmation of what you're saying, I will certainly gather. Welcome, you guys. We are on Micah chapter 2, just started actually, just about 30 seconds ago, and we're just at the first part of verse 12, so Micah 2, verse 12. And again, it's a turn to this restoration. So I certainly will gather Yaakov, Jacob, Kulak, all of you. All right, so notice all of a sudden you're getting this kind of positive. When you hear gathering, either for destruction or salvation, usually for salvation. Now you have the another imperative, kabetz. Notice it's a pl. All right, I'm sorry. Another infinitive with the same root kabetz with the same meaning as asaf. So kabetz, akabetz she'erit Yisrael. I certainly will gather the remnant of Israel. So notice that asaf and kavatz are synonyms, and the second colon kind of strengthens the first. Notice the syntax is the same. So infinitive absolute followed by an imperfect, and then the next colon, infinitive absolute followed by a colon. So gathering, I certainly will gather Jacob, all of you. I certainly will gather again the remnant of Israel. Okay. Then the next line, Yachad asimenu ketzon botra ke'eder betok hadavro tehimena. Okay, together I will make him. Notice that that is a simple imperfect from seem. I will make him, and then the new ending is a third masculine singular ending. So together I will make him as tzon, as sheep, the sheep of Botzra. That's a rare word, and some suggest emendations, but it's generally translated as sheep in a pen or in a fold, sheep fold. And now notice again, he's reiterating, ke'eder, as a flock in the midst of hadavro, as a flock in the midst of his pasture. Now notice the interesting thing about that hadavro is that you have the suffix at the end, third masculine singular, but notice what it's that there is actually a definite article on the front of it, which you don't see, and again, that's why they suggest, notice some emendations according to the versions, that you take that vav, that vav drops off, see? So notice how, again, the reiteration, together I will make him as the sheep of the botra, of the fold, as the flock in the midst of his pasture, okay? Then tehimena me adam. It will, okay, this is from the root, this is a hifil from the root whom, and it means to be noisy, to be in tumult. There's a noun there, hamon, that you're probably more familiar with. Hamon means a tumult of people, if you're in a frenzy, that kind of thing. So this is actually a positive thing. It will be, so you would translate, again, this is a hifil, third feminine plural. Okay? So notice, they will team with, or they will be noisy, me adam, from people. All right? So in other words, what it's saying is that the gathering, it's going to be packed in the pen. That's a positive sign. There's people. All right. Notice how he's setting this up then. First, in the first part of verse 12, I'm going to gather all of you. Okay? Together I will make them as sheep in the... And you know, if you've ever seen any kind of roundup, how noisy cattle get, or sheep. So they're going to be like that, packed in the pen, and that sets you up for what's going to happen in verse 13. All right? Any questions in verse 12, or about verse 12? All right? Now notice... in the syntax, it's really kind of interesting that what happens, because he's obviously talking about the future. I want you guys all to see that. Notice, I translated it like that. This is what I will do. I'm going to gather, and this is what they will be like. I will make him as sheep in a pen. Okay. Now notice he switches verb forms to perfect tense. All right. And let me read it and kind of translate and talk our way through it, because it's kind of interesting. But notice he switches to perfects and vav consecutive imperfects all the way through here. So it is an interesting syntactic switch. So Allah haporeitz lifnehem portzu. All right. Now see, this is still talking about the same situation, kind of the next step. Once you gather the sheepfold, a poreitz is one who breaks through. All right. So notice that in the versions, they have the imperfect form, Ya'aleh, Syriac, and in the Vulgate. Okay. And the reason I want to look at this a little more closely is because most translations kind of don't have the courage to translate it as future. All right. They will translate it as a present tense, at least to try to negotiate that. All right. But you often have this turn, like in Psalm 22 at the end. All of a sudden, he's talking clearly about the future, and he uses perfects and vav consecutive imperfects. There's a number of places that it happens. Now, why he does it could be, I think it's for rhetorical reasons. You know, you're giving this kind of, after all this gloom and doom that's been prophesied, he's prophesying this restoration. And so it's kind of a striking thing, you know, so that for rhetorical reasons, he'll switch verb forms to highlight that. All right. In English, notice that you would lose that if you translate them all with imperfect, with will. All right. But just so I'm not sure what the best English translation is. I just want to show you that I think he's still referring to the future with these forms. All right?
Maybe like when this happens?
Yeah, so it's almost like, I mean, some people explain it as, this is a prophetic perfect. It's as if it had already happened, or it's certain. It's so certain that it's going to happen, you know. So the best way to bring that out in English is not always easy if you really want to make a distinction here. All right? But if I just translate like that, just so you're aware of what's going on, haporeitz, the one breaking out, Allah, will go up, lifnehem, before them. Okay, pause. Partzu, they will break through. In other words, the fence. They're in that enclosed sheep pen. They will break through. Vaya'avoru, and they will pass through. See the vav consecutive? See the vav consecutive imperfects there? Another pause. Notice I'm using the zakeifs to help divide the readings. All right, so he's giving these steps. The poreitz, the breaker, will come up before them. They will break out, and they will pass over. All right. Pass over the sha'ar, the gate. Va'yetsu bo, and they will go out in it, or by it, probably is the best way. Okay, again, that's from Yatsa, call, imperfect, vav, consecutive. So everybody see what's happening here? And then he keeps going and repeats the same verb form that we had in the previous line, vaya avor, malkam. And now notice what's, Notice the syntax with the line right above it. Okay, so you have Lifnehem, Lifnehem. All right, so notice the word order. Their king will pass over before them. Malcolm from Melek. Their king will pass over before them. Now notice what it switches. Va Adonai Berosham, and Yahweh at their head. So notice then that, it's just kind of beautiful theologically when you think about this. So the breaker, if you're reading this, I would say that Haporex, the breaker, the one who's going to break through, is also the king, right? He's identified as the king. And then he's identified as Yahweh. So notice how you have this kind of ambiguity or uncertainty. The king, is it Yahweh, is it not, or is Yahweh before the king? So you have that yes, no, back and forth. And it's a beautiful thing. And then you have the syntax, the switch in verb forms. It's very striking, had a very striking reversal of the reversal of the fortunes of Israel in these two verses. So I'm going to gather them in verse 12. Okay, the breaker will come up before them. They will break out. They will pass through the gate, and they will go out by it. And he, namely their king, will pass over before them, and Adonai at their head. See what an interesting kind of tailpiece to chapter 2 this is. Really interesting. Does anyone have any questions about that? So you're going to struggle with the English translation of 13, and you're going to see translations sometimes just translate past tense, which to me doesn't make sense, because you're in a describing the future. You're going to see a lot of translations translate with present tense, and you can still negotiate it by saying, okay, what he's doing is describing the future as if it's kind of happening right before him. So you might want to make that move with that. Right? But it's at least something to give us pause over. And it's one thing that shows you, by knowing the Hebrew text, you get a little kind of insight into what's going on here that you might not get from an English translation. Okay? Good. Let's go on to chapter 3, because he starts out again now with this kind of condemnation. What he's going to do is bring these oracles of condemnation against different classes of people, all right, in society. And so he's starting out with a certain group through verse 4, which is probably as far as we'll get today. And then in verse 5, he starts with a different class. So even in your Hebrew text notes, there's a little space between 4 and 5 as if to divide that up. So, Va'omar Shimuna Roshe Yaakov. And I said, so notice it's kind of like from verse chapter 2 to chapter 3, we're in a different place. It's a different kind of oracle. All right, so he's going back. And I said, Shimuna. Notice the imperative with a na. Na is usually a particle of politeness or entreaty. So please listen, Roshe Yaakov, O heads of Jacob. Just talking to the rulers here. Uketzine is another word for princes or heads or leaders, katzin, and leaders of Beit Yisrael, of the house of Israel. All right? Now he asks this great rhetorical question. Halo lakem lada'at et hamishpat. Is it not for you, lada'at, to know? Notice that that's a simple infinitive construct from yada, to know. Is it not for you to know et hamishpat, justice, the justice? Okay. Verse 2. Sone tov, ve'ohave ra'a, gozle, Oram me'alehem. Let's stop there. Okay, notice the list or stream of participles. And we've kind of seen a number of those. Haters of good. Sone tov. So it's a participle in construct. Haters of good. Ve'ohave ra'a. And lovers. Notice there's no pointing there. Under that. You expect an extra hey there? And the reason is because of the Koray, they just want you to read Ra. If you look right out, go to the left margin, the Masoretic text has Ra'ah, but evidently there's other evidence that should be just Ra. Lovers of evil, they're both evil, but they're kind of different spellings of it, just so you see that they want you to just read Ra rather than Ra'ah, which is why there's only one vowel pointing under the Resh, not under the Ayin. Okay. So haters of the good and lovers of evil. Gozle oram, those who cut their flesh. Gazal would be something like, I guess cuts as good as any. Yet another participle. Those who cut their flesh. Or means skin. So let's say skin. Those who cut their skin, may alehem, from off them. Okay. Use'eram, and again their flesh. Se'er is flesh. And their flesh may all from off atz motam, their bones. All right. So again, notice the reiteration of the syntax. Notice kind of the redundancy. Micah's working on kind of a certain pattern. So he'll say one thought and then restate it in kind of different words. All right. Questions?
What does that mean, cutting flesh?
Okay, good question. I think that... Let me take that question up when I get to the end of verse 3 let me do it now. I think it's a metaphor. I mean, in other words, it's not talking about people who literally go out and cut people up. I think it's talking about leaders who metaphorically take everything from people that they have, strip them of their goods. It's similar to what we saw in the previous chapters where you have those coming home from war securely, and then robbers take their coat from off them. It's a different way of saying that, but it's more dramatic. So leaders are in positions of power. What are they doing? They are stripping the people of what is rightfully theirs. They're misusing their power, so to speak. So it's a very dramatic way of saying that. Okay? So notice how he follows up in verse 3. Va'asher aklu she'er ami. He says it again. And who akli, who eat She'er ami, the flesh of my people. Okay, notice how he's working here. The next line, ve'oram me'alehem hifshitu, and their skin from off them they strip. This pashat is a hifil from pashat, perfect, and oram is the object of it. Notice how the switch, if you look at line 2 of verse 2, oram is first, then she'er, and now notice how he switches in the next line, verse 3. She'er is first, then oram. All right? And it's a nice structuring device, I think. Now, I mean, imagine if you're reading a that's why I think one of the reasons they do it. If you're reading a text without spaces, without lines, without everything one, it's a way to help you see when thoughts are to be grouped together, like you see a whole thought. See, so how? Notice how it's kind of a signal, okay, kind of ties things up when you see that second oram, okay? So notice what happens then. The effect is, after you get to that hifshitu, you stop, and notice there's a whole other line there. See, it's not necessary. This ve'et atzmotehem pitzehu, and then he keeps going. So it's like you have this kind of arrangement in which he could have stopped after the hifshitu and he would have explained everything, but he keeps going on because it's so so terrible what the leaders are doing. All right. So they eat the flesh of my people and their skin from off them they strip. And et atzmotehem, and their bones, notice how he's repeating his language from verse 2, and their bones, pitzehu, they break. That's... they break into pieces. Notice that that's a PL form from Patzach, PL perfect. And PLs are usually multiplicative of the call form. It's a misnomer to say that the function of PL is intensive. It's multiplicative. So they break in pieces their bones, because notice the next line. Uparsu, and they spread them. Again, the object seems to be their bones. They spread them out, ka'asher basir, as in the pot. Uke basar, and as flesh, basar is flesh, and as flesh betok, in the midst of kalachat, in the midst of a cauldron. Now that makes me think of a witch, so maybe pot would be a better word. But I mean, notice the vivid imagery that Mike is using to describe the crimes of the leaders here. It's really colorful language, and the syntax is very interesting. So notice the repetition, the ordering of the language, and how he, especially in verse 3, just goes on and on with the whole discussion of how he prepares them for food, to eat them. So the whole cannibalism aspect is vividly portrayed here, but I think it's a metaphor for their, quotes, eating their people, eating all their goods, they're taking their livelihood, all that kind of stuff. Yeah, Will.
When you say multiplicative, you mean from one to many?
Yeah, it seems to be like, to, in other words, like to the PL means to break in pieces. So you multiply the pieces rather than just to break in half or something like that. So you're multiplying. So the PL multiplies the effect. So pieces, boom, boom.
And the other thing was, do we have evidence that the text was written in kind of like a straight, consistent text instead of being broken up?
Well, I think, right, all we have, I mean, you know, you have Dead Sea Scrolls and stuff that kind of shows you how they were written. And they're not spaces in between words like you normally think. I mean, it's just like, you know, a lot of the Greek manuscripts you see, you got to know where they're going. So I'm suspecting that sometimes those poetical things like this, what it does as a reader is help you tie up thoughts. When you do a switch like that, it's like, okay, we're coming to the end of a thing, because it has to be a kind of complete package. So what he does here is he kind of makes this complete package at that point in verse 3, and then he goes on with a whole other line and a half. And when he does that, what does that do on a reader? Well, it draws it out. All of a sudden, holy cow, he's going far beyond what's necessary to make his point. So there's an emotional component that's added. Like we saw earlier in Micah, when he was under distress, he used a lot of grammatical irregularities and stuff like that. And so here you see him, as he's describing the crimes of these people, he doesn't just kind of stop a short, terse detail. He keeps going on and on, especially that verse. I mean, look how long verse 3 is. You know, when you look at it even, you can see. Okay? And we'll stop here, actually, and then we'll start with verse 4 and continue from there. Any questions, other questions up through verse 3?
In verse 12, it gave the imagery of like a sheep, a flock of sheep.
Yeah.
And now he's talking to like the heads.
Mm-hmm.
Could it be seen as like shepherds like eating their sheep? Kind of like,
yes.
I think that's a picture of Ezekiel.
It would be that way. Yeah. Yeah. Right. You have the same thing. Here's the leaders of the people. Good.
Do you think there's overlap there?
Well, I mean, I think that you have that same theme that's repeated in the prophets. In Ezekiel, it's like, yeah, the shepherds were not faithful. And so here the image, he doesn't use shepherds for the image,
right,
but just heads and leaders. But again, the way he's describing their, the other one, like in Ezekiel, you get that he's trampling them, you know, they trample their people and all that kind of stuff. And so here you're getting this cooking metaphor. It's cutting them up and cooking. It's kind of cannibalism metaphor. It's like, whoa. I mean, to me, you know, when you read it and kind of think about it, you go, man, that is really a shocking way to describe the crimes of the people. So again, notice too how on a larger scale prophecy works. You're getting this oracle of doom, all of a sudden you get this oracle of hope juxtaposed right to it. There's no transition. And now in chapter 3, again he's going into other detail about the crimes. He's going into more detail again. And so, you know, the prophets were kind of loosely put together like that, I think. And you're getting different aspects of the prophetic message in different parts of the book. The first three chapters are generally called the Oracle of Doom, you know, you'll see, because you'll see a big turn for a while when we get to chapter 4, 5.
Okay? So that's a strange technique to shift from extreme judgment to extreme salvation.
From our,
so
yeah,
quickly from our angle.
Yeah, from our
I'm
perspective.
I'm wondering if it was specific to the prophets, or if it was just common at that time?
That's a good question. I think, right. I mean, from our perspective, we love linear thinking and everything, and you have to remember this is prophetic speech, it's a sermon. So we have that more often than you think. You know, if you get a story sermon or something, that's, you don't try to be so didactic, and like Paul, you know, has more logic and logic within logic kind of stuff. But, I mean, even in the poetry of the laments, all of a sudden you're dealing with a lament, and then, boom, there's all of a sudden this turn to faith that you get. And you get it the opposite way for example, Psalm 40, I think, goes the opposite way. He has all this hope, and all of a sudden it turns back to lament. So you get that even in other kinds of poetry as well. Okay, so it's fun to look at this. So it's fun to look at the structure of the books from that wide distance, just to see what they're doing, and then compare them with each other. You know, as you go through, and you'll see similar things happening. But also, every prophet is unique, you know, in a certain way. All right, very good. Take care, you guys.